Wonderful Saturday before a major celebration of Christmas, and we are just so blessed as we wrap up this year. We're having an opportunity to really, really put some focus, and I'm just so grateful for the opportunity to come with beautiful guests like today's guest, Dr. Alan Gregerman, and to bring value to you. And the commitment is, as I pray each day, Heavenly Father, show me the best ways to have the most fun inspiring the largest number of people to naturally, easily experience vibrantly, exquisitely, healthy, wealthy, passionate living in the shortest amount of time with the least intrusion into their lives so that we can enjoy a global loving community. And we are so blessed today to have a guest in Dr. Gregerman that is going to support us to make a discovery that many of us didn't know about being surrounded by geniuses. Now, Dr. Alan Gregerman is the President and Chief Innovation Officer of VentureWorks Incorporated, which is a consulting firm that helps leading corporations and organizations to be different in ways that really matter to their customers. It's about relationships. It's about getting along and providing service and value. And he is a widely respected author on business strategy, innovation, and the hidden potential of adults. Oh, and we know, if we've never been appreciated, that we've got value, and he's going to help bring that out in us and our colleagues, and yes, this could apply in our families. And he has been called one of the most original thinkers in business today, and get this, the Robin Williams of business consulting. This we've got to learn more about. And his new book, Surrounded by Geniuses, Unlocking the Brilliance in Yourself, Your Colleagues, and Your Organization, provides a unique, engaging, and practical look at the power in all of us to do amazing things. Alan is also the founder and president of Passion for Learning Incorporated, an award-winning nonprofit organization that works to inspire at-risk students to become passionate, lifelong learners, and also a math, reading, and writing volunteer tutor with low-income students. And he is just, with all these qualities, obviously, get ready to meet just a wonderful person with a lot to offer. Welcome to the show, Alan.
Thank you, Ken. It's a pleasure to be with you this evening.
Oh, we're just so excited. And I know people may want to be calling in as we get started, so I want to right away give out these phone numbers. In the U.S., toll-free 877-876-5227. In Canada, 888-815-9756. And for our listeners all over the rest of the planet, 530-876-3222. Now, your website, is that alangregerman.com, the one that you prefer to use?
Yeah, that would be great.
Alangregerman.com.
Exactly.
And people got to go and and see this happy picture of you wearing this tie that I got to get one of these. It is the happiest, most playful tie, and here you are, a serious business professional, looking like you're having too much fun.
Well, you know, I'm very lucky to have the chance to spend time in organizations where they actually believe in the power of people to do remarkable things, people at all levels of the organization, but are having trouble at times kind of unlocking the talents in people.
Ah.
And I think one of the challenges for a lot of your listeners as they think about not only their personal life but their work environment is how can they be in a place in which some of the things that really matter to them and some of the talents they really have beyond the job description that they're attached to can kind of really come out and shine. And so I get to spend a lot of time with organizations helping them to look beyond exactly why they hired somebody to do a specific job and to look at kind of the richness and abilities of all of their people. In essence, to truly think that all of their employees at all levels are really the assets, the most important assets of the company, and how do we unlock ways for people to be passionate about things that matter to them and also really matter to the customers that we serve.
Mm, okay, well, that's important. So, I mean, in your book, of course, Surrounded by Geniuses, you're talking about us having the potential to be not just pretty good or above average, but, I mean, brilliant.
Oh, yeah, because think about it. If you just think about statistics in a humorous way, half of us statistically are above average. You know, and so, but the reality is, you know, and the book's really about two things. The first thing the book is about is exactly what you're saying, and that is we all have an incredible ability within ourselves to be geniuses in ways that really matter. That doesn't mean necessarily that every day we are kind of like Einstein or Madame Curie or Leonardo da Vinci or George Washington Carver. You know, folks who in kind of very specific and kind of what we think of as kind of brilliant ways made a difference. But I would argue that we have the potential to be geniuses in a way that's actually more important because we have the potential, whether it's in business or in volunteer work or nonprofit organizations, to actually be geniuses for those that we choose to serve and really to kind of unlock first in ourselves the ability to come up with something remarkable that we can do to make a difference in their lives and second, to inspire them to truly make a difference, whether they're customers or whether they're low-income students. We have the ability to really help them to do something remarkable. So that's the first thing. The second thing is that, you know, we don't have, there's also a notion out there that in order to be brilliant, you've got to come up with a totally brilliant original idea. And that's just really not the case. In fact, there's so few totally original ideas, and yet the world is filled with brilliance because somebody looks around them and sees genius around them. Whether that genius is in other people or whether that genius is in nature or science or whether that genius is in some other type of discovery that they see. And the truly kind of brilliant people are the folks who see something out there that inspires them and they use that as the starting point for thinking very, very differently.
Oh.
You know, Leonardo da Vinci, who was the first person that we know of who actually spent a lot of time and started to draw flying machines, it wasn't as though he totally conceived on his own of how to fly. He actually paid attention to birds. And he saw that if birds could fly, and flying gave birds such freedom and the ability to travel such great distances, that someday humans ought to be capable of flying, not by just kind of thinking out of it out of kind of like the blue sky, but thinking out of it out of the blue sky in which birds were flying by. You know, so we have the ability to look around us and see brilliant things and use those as the starting point for making a difference. So those are the two big ideas that I like people to think about.
Ah, okay. Well, I mean, we're looking for some breakthroughs because so often, gosh, if people are watching much TV, so much of TV and things out there aren't talking about people's brilliance. They show people doing many stupid things or behaving in ways that are just so much below what people could be doing. And so what I'm wondering, you know, how can we help bridge the gap? Because, I mean, obviously, based on what you're sharing, most of us are missing something. We're not walking into in our lives each day, waking up going, I can't wait to talk to the geniuses around me and to discover the genius within me. How do we help connect to that?
Well, no, and I think you're right. I mean, it's interesting. I often ask, because I do a lot of speaking and a lot of seminars, so I often ask an audience how many of them go to work each day, you know, get a cup of coffee or some water or a cup of tea or some juice, then go to a meeting or two, then handle a few phone calls, then bump into a few colleagues in the hallway, then go back to their desk or wherever they hang out, and suddenly say to themselves, oh my God, I am surrounded by geniuses. And the reality is, hardly anyone ever raises their hand unless maybe they work by themselves. And so what happens is I think most people go to work and they don't think these people are geniuses. In fact, most people think the folks they work with, you know, are either partial or total morons at times. And then I think you're right. We are literally bombarded. When I have to be honest, I don't watch a lot of TV because I think TV is determined to kind of make us dumber than we are. TV doesn't generally, for the most part, I mean, there's some good shows on Discovery Channel and some other places, but for the most part, TV doesn't think of us as geniuses. It thinks of us as kind of lowest common denominator idiots, and we play along by watching these shows, supporting the products that sponsor them, and then giving them very, very good ratings. And so that allows the folks at TV to continue to give us more and more of the same garbage. And so they give us reality shows that, for the most part, show people at their stupidest, and we kind of delight in this. They give us lots of other shows that are more, I think, about kind of crime and kind of the downside of people than really about what's remarkable about people. So I think we need to, by what we kind of watch and pay attention to and what we buy, we need to send a powerful signal that we'd actually like the folks who provide entertainment to us to actually think that we have brains and we have the potential to be much smarter than they give us credit for. Having said that, you know, we ought to, if we're going to watch TV, seek out those shows that are really about the power of ideas, whether they're shows about nature or science or art or music or culture in which humans are at their best. But we ought to spend less time doing that, and certainly we ought to spend time reading, but we also ought to spend time going to museums, whether they're art museums or history museums. We ought to spend time kind of walking through neighborhoods, observing all the stuff around us and seeing kind of the different cultures that surround us at their best and at their most dynamic. We ought to try and get out and travel to places near and far, to places where there are other people who have different ways of doing things and look and see what they do that's truly remarkable and maybe realize that something that they do that we've never thought of could be combined with what we know to enable us to be smarter and more remarkable. You know, if I think about one of the great geniuses that I profiled just kind of a bit in the book was a fellow who, for all intents and purposes, kind of dropped out of school after high school. This was, you know, 600-700 years ago. Decided to hook up on a journey that sounded exciting with his father and his uncle, and spent 3 years heading off from his home in Italy to China. And that fellow, people are probably guessing, is Marco Polo, who, for most of us, you know, only is thought of today as a game that we play in the swimming pool. But this was a remarkable young man who then ended up spending 20 years in China. But along the way to China and in China, what he did was he took a lot of notes on things that people halfway around his world did very differently. Not all the things they did differently were brilliant, but some of the things they did were quite remarkable. And when he came back finally and his ideas came back to Italy, a suspicious kind of country and continent of people suddenly realized there were other ideas out there that maybe combined with what they knew could be used to create a more valuable and kind of more effective and meaningful society. You know, so we need to get out and kind of journey and see what other folks know, because that's part of the way that we grow and are better.
Well, this is excellent, because there's a movement out there that talks about embrace diversity, which is kind of like a vague concept. We know there's differences in different cultures and different people, and to say, well, you know, like them, that's a big statement. But what I'm hearing from you is that your research is helping us to get a pathway to be able to have some very good reasons to embrace diversity and learn from others for our own benefit.
Well, I think you're exactly right. You know, and we read about diversity in the newspapers and magazines all the time, and we hear about where almost wherever we work that, you know, our organizations are trying to talk about how they welcome diversity. And I think that's important, but I think it's even a bit more simplistic than we ought to think about it as individuals and organizations. So I think what we think about is we look around the table and if everybody kind of looks the same, then we say, well, we're not particularly diverse. So we've got to make sure that some of the people sitting in these chairs look different than some of the other people. Now, that's all well and good, and we live, you know, most of us in an increasingly diverse society. But we don't want to do that because it's a requirement. We want to do it because it absolutely just makes sense for ourselves and for our organization. Why in the world would anyone want to sit around a table with just people like them? Just people who look like them, but more importantly, just people who come from the same place as them and think exactly like them. I mean, that's a prescription for never growing as a human being. And so if we truly want to grow, we ought to be out there seeking and engaging with people who are positive people but different than us, who have some different elements of how they look at the world, who have some different ways that they express kind of their culture, who have different lessons that their societies have learned over time. And we ought to embrace that and say, what can we learn from them? What are the great stories from their culture? What are the great teachings from their culture that may really tie into me being more complete and fulfilled as a person or as an organization? Because somewhere between those ideas are going to be kind of brilliant. We didn't, you know, it's kind of sad for a lot of people to realize, we actually don't know here in America, you know, everything there is to know. And some of our ideas may not even be the best ideas in the world. So why not look to see if there's other learning that we can find?
Yeah, well, makes perfect sense to me. And I'm wondering if these things tie in, because I know some of our listeners, they having children out there, there's many challenges in school, and their kids may not be labeled at risk, but the number of kids dropping out of school, I mean, that's just huge. And I was just kind of curious if there was a tie-in between your work in Surrounded by Geniuses, or does it get into the other book, Lessons from the Sandbox? You know, how do we tie some of these things in with helping at-risk students or just families that have got students in school where it may be challenging?
Well, I think what we have to do and what we're struggling with kind of in our program is we're in an era in which we're driven by things like this No Child Left Behind Act, which has been translated by an awful lot of school systems to be, let's cram as much, and to use a French term, kind of crap into our basic stuff. Maybe I should be gentler.
Crappé.
Yes, let's cram as much stuff into kids' heads that enables them to pass tests, but not that empowers them to be excited about learning. And so when we do that, we lose a lot of kids because the relevance of school becomes less and less. So if you think about school, not unlike I think about the workplace, think about how awful work is if you can't find in any way your passion and let it shine in work. And I think that's probably something that lots of your listeners struggle with each and every day and every week when they go to work. Now imagine that we have all of our kids who are by nature curious and creative and want to think differently in a place where we don't find what's magic about them. And in fact, we've gone to the opposite extreme. We've taken art away. We've taken a lot of music away. We've taken a lot of classes that have to do with creativity away. We've taken a lot of interesting after-school programs away, and we're trying to get enough kind of reading, writing, and arithmetic into their heads so they can pass tests we've determined are essential for literacy. And in the process, if we never connect with them about what excites them, they're never going to be effective at learning these basic things. But if we can get them inspired to find something they're passionate about, whether it's music or filmmaking or culinary arts or kind of the human body and kind of studying kind of anatomy and things like physiology and things like that, if we can't get them excited about that first as the lever, we've missed the chance to get them to be willing to do the basics. If I can get them excited about those other things, then they can see where math and reading and writing are relevant. And so I think for an awful lot of parents who are struggling to get their kids to simply kind of keep up in kind of a funny world of school, I think they need to be the ones, if the school's not focused on it, they're absolutely about helping their kids to find what their passion is and making what investments they can in exposing them to places where they can see kind of genius and brilliance in action and see themselves possibly someday making a contribution to that.
Mm, okay. And I would guess in that process of the parents or families supporting their children in this way, I think you could get a lot of bonding going on.
Well, I think it would really help because it adds additional meaning to the relationship that parents have with kids. As opposed to parents kind of arguing as their kids get older, especially, you know, being the father of a teenager, you know, kind of arguing about kind of kids not being as focused as they could be, spending too much time on the computer, watching TV, whatever the case is, not really getting excited about kind of school and learning. Let's go back to the notion that school really ought to be about learning, that we're looking to build the foundation to be lifetime learners. And if parents can get engaged in a passionate way and get excited about helping their kids to find what's magic about them and then supporting them in that, they have a much stronger basis for having a very good relationship. School doesn't need to be kind of a divisive wedge that it so often is between kids and parents.
Well, I certainly want to invite some of our listeners, whether it's about their children or about some of their work setting and people around them, to take advantage of our guests' knowledge today. And our call-in numbers, toll-free 877-876-5227 in the U.S. For those listeners in Canada, 888-815-9756. And outside of those two areas, 530-876-5227. Now, your book, Alan, I'm just wondering, you present in there 10 like awesome and truly unique journeys to unlock the brilliance in ourselves and our organization. Can you share some of that with us?
Oh, I'd love to. You know, so one of the things that I'm always trying to get people to think about is, how do they kind of unlock the genius in themselves by finding genius in the world around them? And so what I do in the book, as you say, is I've got kind of these 10 journeys, and I want people to see that there's brilliance in all aspects of life around us. There's brilliance in kind of history. There's brilliance in kind of world-class organizations and businesses. There's brilliance in science, nature, even science fiction. So let me give you a few that I think kind of really matter. One of the things that I'm regularly thinking about in organizations, whether those organizations are companies or whether those organizations are government agencies or volunteer organizations or social or civic organizations or things that we might do in our world of church or synagogue or whatever religious organization we're affiliated in, is one of the things that I think would really matter is our ability to be able to say to those folks we serve that we're committed to delivering what we promise in a perfect way, that we guarantee their satisfaction in a program we offer, a product, a service, something like that. So I take a journey with the readers, and I kind of bring them to the life of L.L. Bean. You know, and L.L. Bean started this very famous company called L.L. Bean Company in Freeport, Maine. And he started this company kind of in a really bad way. And I say that because the first product he ever created was something called the Maine Hunting Boot. It was an insulated boot that he created, and you can still buy roughly the same product today from them, to help people in kind of cold, damp months in Maine to be able to be out there hunting and fishing, which was his passion. He made 100 pairs of these boots. He sold them pretty quickly because they seemed like a pretty cool idea. Within a month, 90 of these pairs of boots fell apart. Now, he could have very well just folded his tent and said, I'm sorry, here's your money back. But instead, he was committed to doing the right thing. So he redesigned the boots, sent them back to people, and then sent with them a note. And the note said, I apologize for what happened. I've redesigned these boots, and I want to tell you now that if at any time in the life of these boots that I've sent you, it can be a month, a year, 5 years, or the lifetime of them, you don't believe that this redesigned boot is giving you value commensurate with what you've paid for it, you send them back to me, and I will refund your money, no questions asked, or give you another pair of boots. Now, imagine this. he had actually decided, unlike other companies, that the customer would decide whether or not the product that they got was worth their money. So he created what we now think of as the unconditional guarantee of satisfaction. Now imagine it's the holiday season, and so your guests, a lot of your guests are doing Christmas shopping still this evening. Hopefully they're still listening to the show. But they're doing Christmas shopping, and they go to an electronics store like Best Buy, and they see this large TV that they want to get, hopefully now only to watch really good stuff on TV that will inspire their brain.
Exactly.
And they see this, and they're talking to the salesperson, and the salesperson says, and you know, this wonderful TV that costs $1,000 or more, it comes with a 90-day warranty. That is pretty darn impressive, don't you think? They absolutely are willing to stand behind their product for a full 90 days.
Oh, wow, that's a 3 months to many of us.
Yeah, it is 3 months.
Oh,
you know, if you catch only the 30-day month, that's awesome, isn't it? You know, so we say to ourselves, God, they really care about us. They really care about the customer. And then the salesperson says, because there's more money in it for him or her, but you know, here at Best Buy, you know, if you really want to protect this, you know, for extra umpteen $100, you know, we'll give you an extra 3 or 5 year protection plan. Okay? So we live in a world in which we're now bombarded with products that are going to be obsolete, and we have to pay to protect ourselves from them kind of falling apart. Now, we have a 26-year-old Zenith TV in our living room. You know, it's not particularly stellar, but it keeps working 26 years later.
Wow.
You know, but these new ones, you know, they have all this fancy stuff, and so they can't guarantee them. So the beauty of the L.L. Bean guy here was his view was that the customer is the arbiter of whether or not they get value from the products that we actually kind of buy. And that's an awesome idea. Now, imagine at L.L. Bean, they've got to actually make really good products now. And so it challenges everyone in their organization to be an everyday genius, to figure out what can we do to make sure that our products really hold up and are really good quality. Now, I believe in every organization, if we were committed to being that good, if we were committed to really looking at how do we offer products and services that are the best they can possibly be, that we would be awesome. We would be unbeatable at what we do. And so that's a simple journey of looking at a guy 97 years ago who actually decided to do the right thing by the customers he serves. And so if your listeners could look at every place in which they're involved in doing something that matters and what could they do to commit to being perfect at it, they would change the equation in terms of their motivation to be a genius and the value it delivered to the customers that they serve. So that's one. Now, in another month, something remarkable is going to happen in all of our neighborhoods in the U.S. at least, and I think in Canada as well, and that is that a really amazing group of 8, 9, 10, and 11-year-old salespeople with absolutely no sales training are going to hit the streets knocking on doors selling Girl Scout cookies.
Ah.
And as the father of two Girl Scouts, I kind of relished this time. Because just as my neighbors do, it brings me to kind of an experience that I think is genuine and really matters. And so, but the question I always raise when I kind of talk about this story is, why is it that untrained young girls can get anyone to buy cookies, and the most highly trained professional salespeople have an awful lot of trouble getting their foot in the door? And I think it's because when a Girl Scout knocks on the door and somebody opens, what happens then is a conversation that really matters. It's a conversation in which they reconnect from last year, in which a neighbor typically says, well, you know, Carly, you look so much more grown up this year. And Carly says, well, you know, I grew 3 inches this year. And then she says, and how's your dog? Would you like to come in for hot chocolate? How's your family? How's school? And what's happened is what people see in our complex, crazy world is a chance for a few moments to reconnect with a tradition that's gone on for 80 years of girls who actually are part of the community, who contribute to the community, who make a difference, and who at the end of the conversation might be selling cookies, but I don't think it really is about the cookies at all. I think we need to, when we see the Girl Scouts coming, we need to think about the role that having meaningful conversations in our lives could have. Our lives as citizens, our lives in our network of family and friends, and our lives in the workplace. if we truly had conversations that were sincere and caring, as opposed to conversations that were about trying to get somebody to buy something or trying to convince a coworker to do something our way, I think we'd get to a better result 99% of the time. And so, again, that's another example of simply taking a journey that comes to us of the Girl Scouts and thinking about kind of the magic of what they bring and how it could really matter to our lives.
Wow. That is reminiscent in a way of a saying that I'd heard many years ago from Cabot Robert that I think has been echoed by a number of professionals, something to the effect, people don't care how much you know until they know how much you care.
I think you're exactly right. And I think if your listeners, and I'm sure you know that regularly in your show, you're giving people a sense of the power of that idea, but I think if people really understood that more, they would have far more kind of civil and positive and kind of growing developmental conversations with those people who matter to them most.
Mm. Now, I'm just curious, and I know this is probably not on the subject of your book, it just kind of comes to mind, in a fast-paced world with so many demands and deadlines, any hints on how to help people to transition into taking more time to something that's going to make them and the people they interact with happier, and of course, in the process, get more business done?
Well, I think it absolutely relates. So let me give you a few ideas. Here's something that we do, and I'll start on the organizational side. Here's something that we do from an organizational perspective that I think really makes a difference, and that is that we actually encourage all of the companies and organizations we've worked with to challenge their people to take time out from work and go on journeys, kind of field trips in their communities, looking for ideas and inspiration. Typically, that means when they first get started, like an afternoon a month, in which they encourage people to go out in the world looking for ideas. Often, they give them little or no guidance, and they simply say, go to a museum, go to a play, go to a neighborhood where you think interesting stuff is going on, take a class. And all we ask you to do is come back and tell us what you've learned that's different than the way we do things and how that might help us to be smarter. So that's the first thing. And so I think as organizations, if we can start to create a culture of challenging people to be smarter and more fulfilled and look for kind of inspiration and look to learn and grow, we could absolutely get more out of them. I'm totally convinced of that. And I've been doing this for the last, 10 to 15 years. The second thing is that very same principle absolutely applies to our personal life. You know, the world is fast-paced. We have an awful lot of stuff on our to-do list. We all are carrying these PDAs, we're, Blackberries, Palms, whatever they are. We are all, writing lists of all the stuff we have to do. We're all racing to check our email. We have to, as individuals, suddenly stop and say, I'm not going to be a slave to these gadgets anymore. I'm not going to be a slave to my to-do list. I'm going to start making time for me to be encouraged about learning and growing and exploring those parts of the world around me that I think might kind of hold keys and I might be really excited and comfortable in. And we have to start modestly, but commit to yourself that half a day a month at first, you're going to go on an exploration to discover new things, learn things, figure out ideas out there that are cool, go to a part of town that you've never been to, hear music that you've never listened to, even if it's music in a language you can't even understand. So we're going to go out there and kind of engage the world and see what's remarkable about the world. You know, as you were talking about TV a while ago, Ken, it's interesting to me. Because if we read the newspapers, we get, I believe, a really skewed view of the world because the newspaper's talking about all the tragedies that are going on, and certainly the world needs to be repaired. I absolutely understand that. But the reality is there are a lot of wonderful people doing remarkable things out there in the world. There are a lot of people showing what it truly means to be a human at our best. And that stuff's out there for us to kind of engage with and learn from and grow from. And if we challenge ourselves to do that, we really have incredible potential to kind of unlock kind of our innate sense of curiosity and our ability over time to be much more fulfilled as a person. And we owe it to ourselves to do that, because otherwise we're going to run ourselves into the ground.
Now, what I'm guessing, and like to get confirmation, by you going into these corporations and putting these ideas forward, are you saying from more from the top down, where some of the corporations are encouraging their people to take time to do this and supporting that can happen?
I think what's happening is that smart companies are suddenly realizing that top down isn't going to make it happen. You know, and I think smart leaders are realizing they don't have all the answers, and that they'll be far more successful as an organization if they can absolutely unlock all of this kind of energy and talent in their people. Mm-hmm. So let me give you an example, which is interesting, because we used to think of kind of Japanese companies as being quite a bit more kind of rigid and structured than our companies are. And in some respects they are, but I have to be honest, one of the most remarkable companies that I've been able to kind of witness is today the largest automobile company in the world. 25 years ago, no one would have bought their products in America because they thought they were poor quality, and that's Toyota. Now, one of the things that Toyota has done, which is remarkable, is they challenge every single employee to figure out how to make the company more successful. And last year, as a result of challenging their employees worldwide, they received from employees 2 million suggestions for ways they could improve the company's products and how it did business. Now, 2 million ideas, that sounds pretty cool, but what's more remarkable is the company implemented 1.5 million of those ideas.
Oh, wow.
They actually told people, if you can see a way to make something better, your job is to do it. And they give people in the assembly line permission to stop the assembly line to change the way they're doing things if it makes the car better. Now, imagine that. So this is a huge company. Now imagine it's easier in a smaller company. So I think companies are realizing that the real talent are the folks closest to the products and closest to the customers, because those are the folks who each and every day see what really matters to the folks we serve and are able to do something remarkable and brilliant to do. And so leaders, if they're smart, are seeing that. And part of what I'm trying to do in Surrounded by Geniuses is give leaders a straightforward formula for how they can actually tap all of this talent. I mean, imagine you're in a company, and let's say it only has 100 employees. And what if you're a leader and you say, well, you know, me and my two buddies here, the other two leaders here, we're the really smartest people, so just you guys do your jobs and we'll come up with ideas. That gives you a very limited set of ideas. But imagine if those same folks said, we have 100 people here, and if we can get each one of them to look at what they're responsible for and given their insight to figure out how to do it better, we suddenly have a powerful kind of ability to get lots of brilliance that makes us lots better. And so I think smart leaders are finally starting to figure that out. And I'm assuming, given the types of things you cover and the guests you cover and the folks you kind of target, that a lot of the people who listen to your organization, if they're managers or leaders in organizations, when they're listening to your show, they're the type of people who I think really understand the power of the people in their organization but are looking for ways to unlock that. And so, you know, that's a key reason I wrote this book, Surrounded by Geniuses, is to really get them to see that there are tools out there that can easily help them to unlock this.
And essentially, your book is some of the, I guess, hints and helpful pathways from your doing this work for many years.
Yeah, I've been, you know, as I mentioned, I've been lucky enough to find enough companies who are willing to let me take what I think are obvious ideas, but in corporate America, kind of crazy ideas, and are willing to try and transform their organization to believe that their people have the potential to be brilliant. You know, and we have ideas all around us, you know, and so it's exciting. If you look, you know, probably for most of your listeners at some point in their kind of lives, and probably some point relatively recently, whether they were traveling or they had to put their car in the shop, they had to rent a car. You know, and if you ask most people who are the biggest car rental companies in the world, they'd say Hertz is, or Avis, or National. Well, you know, that would have been true till a few years ago. But for a very important reason, a kind of an upstart company that wasn't very big 25, 30 years ago when it got started, became kind of the dominant player, in, at least in North American car rental. And that's a company called Enterprise Rent-A-Car. Now, do they have different cars than everybody else? No, not really. Do they do a lot of things? Are their prices a lot cheaper? I don't think they're that much cheaper, maybe a little bit cheaper. But the big innovation that they had was an everyday genius's idea in their branch in 1974 in Orlando, Florida, in which their primary focus was helping people to rent a car when their car was in the shop for kind of maintenance or an insurance problem, you know, somebody hit them. Their local person suddenly one day said, you know, we've got to offer a bit of a different service, and we ought to really help our customers because most of our customers' cars are in trouble. They're not working right now. And so he said, why don't we actually just pick them up at home, okay? And so he created this idea at Enterprise, we'll pick you up. And it stuck. And they started to do it in Orlando, and that idea spread. And that was really different than all the other rent-a-car companies. And that was an idea that mattered. It was a convenience that mattered to customers. Was he a rocket scientist? Probably not. Was he a decent guy who cared about the customers? Exactly so. And so he looked around at the world of customers, you know, and it wasn't somebody at corporate in Tulsa, Oklahoma, or wherever Enterprise is based, saying, you know, you guys, I got a brilliant idea, you ought to do this. It was someone close to the customer who had a moment of brilliance. And that moment of brilliance transformed a company in a critical way into what is now the largest car rental company in the world. So what I'm saying is those geniuses exist in all of our organizations. Are we, as organizations, going to challenge them to be brilliant so that we can be the best we can be?
Yeah, that's huge. Now, can you share a little bit from your years of experience of some of the fruits that you've seen come forward from, you know, you're going into businesses and helping them expand their view of people around them?
Well, a lot of what I do, and I appreciate the chance to talk about it, is a lot of what I do is I simply get organizations to say, let's get people together, give them a few basic tools for being brilliant, and then see what happens and inspire them to do it. And so we do that regularly with organizations in which we take people at all levels of the organization and we ask them to figure out what matters to the customers. And often they say that being faster matters to the customers. So we help them figure out how to think in ways that are faster, or changing a process really matters. But it's really about them now looking at what they do and really changing the way they engage people. Sometimes we have the privilege of having a lot of fun with folks. So imagine this. We were called by a company. It's a retail company. And their big challenge was that they were having trouble getting kind of a new generation of kind of salespeople to really in any meaningful way kind of engage the customers in ways the customers wanted to be engaged. So I was trying to think about a way to get them to think differently. And so one day I said to them, here's what I'd like you to do. I know it's going to be early for you, but so have a couple cups of coffee. But I want you to meet me at the following address, and it's here in Washington, D.C., where I'm based. And that's 3100 Connecticut Avenue, Northwest. And I said, meet me there at 6:30 in the morning, because we're going to figure out how to think differently. And so they all showed up there, kind of, I'd like to say bright-eyed and bushy-tailed, but more kind of yawning and kind of wondering why they had to be up so early.
Oh, no.
And at they got to 3100 Connecticut Avenue. They looked around, and there was a really big sign there, and the really big sign said, Welcome to the National Zoo. And so they looked at me, and they said, is there a reason we're here? And I said, there's an incredible reason we're here. And they said, yes, are you going to share that with us? And I said, absolutely. And I gave them all a 97-cent clipboard from Staples and a pad of blank paper. And I said, here's what we're going to do. We're here at the time when most of the animals in the National Zoo are about to wake up, and they're about to greet each other. They're going to greet their colleagues who are their same species. They're going to greet animals from a different species. They're going to greet the folks who happen to walk up to kind of their areas. And they're going to do it in very interesting ways. And all I want you to do for the next 2 hours is wander around and write down all the interesting and unusual animal greetings that you can find. And they looked at me and they said, you know, there is not enough coffee in the world to do this. And I said, well, you know, then you're going to have to figure out how to do it without the aid of caffeine. You might have to use your own natural curiosity here. And they looked at me and said, oh, God, I don't know what our company's paying you, but you must be the craziest guy on the entire planet, and we're dumb enough to go along with it. Uh-oh. And I said, hey, I'll see you in 2 hours. If it's a bad experience, hey, chalk it up, you know, spend some time at the zoo, and then you can just move on. And interestingly, 2 hours later, they all came back, energized, smiling, and with notepads full of interesting ideas. And I said, so, was it the worst time you've ever had? And they said it actually was the most fun we've ever had trying to think about a business problem. Because the reality is most organizations, when you have a problem, then suddenly someone like the big boss, you know, gets everybody around the table and says, you know, we're really screwing up here. You know, we better come up with a better idea. Does anybody have one? And in the pressure of that, nobody comes up with anything. In fact, they're trying to figure out how to get out of the meeting. And so these people all had kind of an energizing experience of seeing what animals do. And they saw that some animals kind of really kept their distance when, you know, it was time to wake up. Other animals kind of came forward because they were really curious. Some animals sang. Some animals kind of danced or did a ritual. Some paced back and forth. But they did this based on seeing who was around them. Well, that kind of challenged these folks to think about, is there a song that we might sing, or should our music be different? Should we really try and engage the customer before we come up to them? Should we come up in kind of a curious way and ask different questions than we ask? A whole set of things were triggered that are things they might have figured out from kind of looking at the world the way they traditionally did, but they probably wouldn't have in a relaxed way. It would have been stressful, and they might not have come up with the same stuff. Having said that, they committed to creating a totally different routine for how they engaged customers, and it turned out it was a routine that became much more powerful, much more comfortable for the customers, and actually changed the way that their business fortunes played out. So that's one example of how I kind of look to get people engaged in kind of very different ways. And the exciting thing is I find that if you just believe that people have the ability to be curious, they have the ability to smile, they have the ability to have fun, they have the ability to grow and try new things. If you believe that adult humans have the capability to really kind of change and make a difference, then anything is possible. And so that's kind of oddly what I spend my days doing. I regularly design kind of field excursions for people to have them look at the world around them in new and compelling ways, and think about what it means for them and their success. And so those are a few examples. I mean, another example, if you want, that was a lot of fun.
Please.
We had a customer. It was a very big organization. It was an international organization. I want to say with like 18,000 employees and like 100 offices worldwide. And they were having a lot of trouble communicating. Now, the good thing for them was that their headquarters was in the Boston area. So that was like a natural for me to think about how to get them to think differently. And so the challenge they had was they were communicating poorly. They weren't communicating the right information. People were getting mixed signals. They were relying on email, which I'm sure a lot of your listeners get frustrated by because their organizations probably are heavily kind of email intensive because a lot of leaders don't want to actually talk face-to-face to human beings who work with them. But whatever the case is, so they were having a lot of challenges. So what I did for them was I planned a day, and the day I took them through was a journey through one of the most important moments in American history, and that was when Paul Revere raced through the countryside on his horse, warning the colonists that the British were coming. And they did it in a part of Boston, for any of your listeners who've been there, which is now called the Freedom Trail, in which he went from Boston to Lexington and then to Concord. And in the process, colonists communicated with each other that suddenly there was a challenge, and this potentially was the start of what would become our great nation. And interestingly, by the next day, colonists from all six New England states, as a result of Paul Revere communicating with other folks who on horseback communicated with others because they didn't have email and they didn't have a good internet connection in the 1770s.
Yeah. Oh, it was terrible back then.
Yeah. And so colonists somehow from all six New England states within 24 hours arrived in Concord to defend Concord from the British. So I made folks in this company, the leadership team, and it was kind of a cold, damp day, I made them walk the 10 miles from Lexington to Concord. And at each mile stop, I planted on a tree, I nailed to a tree, an idea I needed them to think about what it truly meant to communicate with other people. And I challenged them to think about if the colonists could somehow communicate with each other and make this remarkable show of kind of force and commitment to the possibility of a new nation, why couldn't they, with all the tools they have for communicating, including going face-to-face and having all-hands meetings in a cafeteria, why couldn't they get simple messages that mattered to the folks they chose to have as their employees? And part of what we realized was that most companies, even if they really do something that matters, have a terrible time communicating that what they do is really important and what they do makes a difference in the lives of those they serve. And so in the absence of that, you don't have the same basis for communicating. The colonists were all about being treated fairly and having the rights, their rights, actually respected. That's something worth fighting for. I'd argue if we do something in a business or an organization that matters to those we serve, that's worth fighting for too, and we ought to make it exciting and clear to people so they'll not necessarily take up arms, but they will actually kind of take up the cause of being brilliant.
Wow. That's exceptional. Talk about taking something simple and then applying it to people's lives where it takes them out of the box, and all of a sudden they're coming up with new ideas. And so you've found the way to bridge the gap to connect us to this latent brilliance, this genius within us.
Well, I think people, you know, I want to give people a lot of credit because they actually deserve it. And, you know, for the most part, they don't let me down. But I think most organizations don't give people the credit they deserve. And so that's part of the problems we have in so many workplaces.
And that's, as you get out there into more places, this is important. I'm sure people are going to want to learn more about how to get the book. But given out the website, I think it's probably time to do that again.
Okay, no, that would be great. Well, you know, the book, again, is called Surrounded by Geniuses. I like to joke and say it's available wherever thoughtful books are sold. You know, so it's certainly available. Hopefully, if it's not available at your local bookstore, please ask them to make it available because I think it could be useful to you. And then it's also available online if people prefer to shop online. And I think you can still, if you want to give it as a Christmas gift, I think there still are probably like 15 hours left for Amazon online to get you the book, you know, so it's available there. And then if they want more information about the kinds of things that I do, simply go to www.alangregerman.com or go to our company website, which is www.venture-works.com, and there they'll get information about the types of kind of seminars and programs we do that help companies and organizations to kind of unlock their genius.
Ah, and you'd be delighted to hear both from people with different businesses as well as people with organizations where you're doing this work with at-risk students?
Oh, from nonprofits, any organization. Yeah. I mean, I really view kind of my life's work as helping people to see the genius that's in themselves and the genius that's in the folks that they serve.
You know, it makes me curious, Alan, as we're kind of wrapping things up here, is that these people that have been acknowledged in businesses,
right.
I'm wondering how much of that translates into them going home and seeing the brilliance in their spouses and children.
You know, I don't have, you know, a lot of information about that, but I've got to believe that it really matters.
Yeah.
I've got to believe that if people suddenly see kind of the possibilities in themselves and their ability within the work environment to really make things happen that matter, I've got to believe that they suddenly see that in other aspects of their lives, they and their spouses and their children can together really kind of unlock genius in themselves, and that the more we encourage people to bring out their talents, the more we look to find the song in each of us, the more we can help each other to be more successful. And I think when we're more successful, more confident about ourselves, we have the power to have better relationships.
Oh, absolutely. So the traditional hardened workforce type of a thing where the boss is grumpy and demanding and putting pressure on people who then go home and look for how to release that energy, kicking the cat, the dog, whatever, you name it. And now here we're having a total turnaround where these businesses are now treating people with a respect and an anticipation of their innate goodness. And then they get to take that home and have that happen to their families of you know, rubs off the same way, I guess.
Oh, I think we can truly make a real difference if we just began to think about the potential of people and people's abilities to do things kind of that really matter, and that all of us really have talent. You know, and if we stop lamenting, you know, the frustrations we have and suddenly saying we can figure out together how to be brilliant, I think, you know, we can make a compelling difference in the lives of people and in all aspects of their lives. So that's a huge kind of opportunity for us. And so how do we get people and organizations to be excited about that? Because we'd all be so much more productive, and we need to be productive. I mean, we have no choice.
Oh, absolutely. Wow. Well, I'll tell you, I feel like myself and our listeners, Dr. Alan Gregerman, you have given us a fabulous gift. Talk about a pre-Christmas bonus here. It's better than sitting on Santa's lap. This is like helping to acknowledge us, and we want to get that copy of that book. I know I love mine, and Surrounded by Geniuses, and I just want to thank you so much for helping us to go into this wonderful holiday season with a new outlook on what our work life can be like and what our home life can be like as we start to discover that brilliance within ourselves and those around us. So, wow, that's a great gift. I want to thank you for being a guest and helping and blessing our lives.
Well, thank you, Ken, for giving me the chance to be on your show. I've really enjoyed the conversation.
Oh, you're welcome. And to you and my beloved listeners, we just wish you a happy holidays and a wonderful new year coming up, and invite my listeners, tune in next week for more fun and adventures here at Advanced Living Radio on bbsradio.com. And all of you, God bless. Until we meet again, goodbye for now.
Let go of it.
Here's some music.